T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Zero, all engine running. Liftoff, we have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
Here, we got a roll program.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here. Today, the guest on my podcast is Brett Oldham. This is an interview I did with Brett when I had the show The Cameron Files a few years back. Brett Oldham wrote the book The Children of the Greys, which is a fantastic book. I always have a couple of stories, maybe 20, 25 favorite stories I have. From time to time, I'll tell. This is one of the top stories that I think in ufology. Brett had a dramatic experience, and I'm going to play the interview today. Basically, I give him credit for a very interesting thing. He had the chutzpah during his encounter on board the ship to ask the tall gray, what is your concept of God? And for that, he gets a gold star. You can hear what the reply from the tall gray was. And also what happens after. I don't really re-listen to my interviews, but I'm pretty sure after he gets the answer, a dramatic thing happens inside the craft. And this is one of the few things that I wanted to chase with my few nickels and dimes that I have. It is an incident that happened to Brett Oldham, and also happened to Suzanne Chancellor. It never came to pass, but you'll hear a very interesting thing that they, incident that happens on board the ship that they both share. This is one of these great stories. I'm putting it in today because I have a number of stories I'm working on right now that I'm writing up one of the most dramatic experiences I've ever had in my life last night, which will be chapter 6 in the book called The Super Bowl. So I'm trying to write that up today, a very dramatic event. So I'm going to replay this interview while I work on this other project. I still consider myself to be the luckiest person ever to walk the face of the earth with the experiences I've had and with the people I've been allowed to interview and interact with. Brett Oldham is one of them. This is one of the better stories in ufology. Please enjoy it. Thank you to life, which has given me so much.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado la risa y me ha dado el llanto. Así yo distingo dicha de quebranto, los dos materiales que forman mi canto. Y el canto de ustedes, que es el mismo canto. El canto de todos, que es mi propio canto. Gracias a la vida. Gracias a la vida.
Listening to The Cameron Files. As always, thank you for taking some of your valuable time to listen. First, a little bit of an update. I just had a great weekend at the StarWorks USA convention in Laughlin, Nevada last weekend, not because there was good food and drink, but because of a lot of weird stuff happened. Most of this dealt with bizarre synchronicities and the subjects of apports, which seemed to be dropped on us over and over again. There was, I think, 12 incidents and 9 witnesses, and I will update people on my White House UFO YouTube channel with some of the interviews I did there and with this very bizarre story about feathers. I met an experiencer by the name of Tony from the UK who got a message from whoever he's dealing with. And the message he got was to travel to America for the first time. He's very, very sick, but he got this message. He had to travel to America. First ever UFO conference. He's only had UFO encounters for about a year and a half. And he got the message to come and see myself and Paula Harris. And he's had almost daily sightings since May of this year. And he's got piles of photographs. So they basically wanted me to see his incredible photographs. And of course, I am not interested in photographs. So I had a 90-minute interview with him. And some of that's going to be on my White House UFO YouTube channel, and I'll probably have him on the radio show. Fascinating story. I interviewed him for 90 minutes without looking at the photos, and he has photographs of black helicopters 50 feet over his head with UFOs in behind them. Incredible story. And this interview that I did led to one of the most bizarre experiences I've had in 43 years of UFO craziness. Lastly, for those who are in the Tucson area, this Sunday I will describe the weirdness that went on over the last couple of weeks. The event will be at the Quantum Horizons Meetup. It's on Sunday, November 18th, 1:30 till 4:30, and it's at the Ekstrom Columbus Library. It's 4350 East 22nd Street in Tucson, Arizona. For people who are in the area, it's all this stuff that I'm going to be talking about, and it'll probably be a fairly lengthy lecture, is stuff that just happened in the last couple of weeks. And speaking of experiencers, I have always sort of kept in my head sort of a list of the top 10 experiencer stories, and tonight I have the honor of talking to Brett Oldham, who is one of, I consider, the top 10 stories that you need to read when it comes to experiencers and what's going on with UFOs. He's the author of The Children of the Greys and The Baby Takers. I first met Brett at a gathering in the home of Betsy Platt in Vegas many years back. And I've listened to most of the interviews he's done. I've read his book. And every time I have an interview of his, I usually listen to it about 6 times. He's an absolute wealth of knowledge, and it's an honor for me to have him on the show and to sort of ask him some questions that maybe he hasn't been asked before. I also consider Brett important because there's top UFO covers. The top UFO cover is and always will be the Communion cover, but the Children of the Greys, according to me, has the second top UFO cover. You can buy the book just to get the cover, and I'll ask Brett about where this idea for the cover came from. So welcome, Brett, and I'm honored to have you on, and thanks for taking the time to talk to me.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Grant. I have the utmost respect for your work, and I follow a lot of what you do as well. I think you're always kind of ahead of the pack when it comes to researchers, and I really appreciate that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. So let's, for the people who don't really know your story, maybe start from the beginning when you're a little child and sort of lead people to how you knew something was going on.
My story started when I was 5 years old. I lived in a farm in southern Illinois, pretty much out in the country. It's just a gravel road going by this old farmhouse, surrounded by cornfields and soybean fields. I'd never been exposed to any kind of alien anything. We just had a small black and white television, and back 12 to 15p. And I had nothing to process this by. I was just instantly petrified. And before I could even scream for my mom or anything, I was gone. And the next thing I know, I woke up and I was laying on a table and I was surrounded by these things. And just going into hysterics. And that pretty much started the whole process. But then I went through my childhood. I actually met the first tall gray, the very first encounter, where they had taken me to an area of what I perceived to be a craft, and I still perceive it to be, where these seats were built into the craft itself, and it was rounded to smooth, kind of layered three levels up, and they were a lot of the small grays sitting around there, and they introduced me and set me down beside this tall gray. And he sort of befriended me, and I remember thinking, like, I couldn't figure out how I was hearing what he was saying, even because he wasn't moving his mouth. And I sort of had nothing to go on as far as, like, safety or what was going on, and I still had no idea what was happening to me. And I remember thinking, well, this one's at least nice to me. And when they returned me, I told my mom the next day, that these little men came and got me, and of course, my parents just passed it off as a bad dream or childhood imagination or whatever. And they actually took me one other time soon after that. And then I really, what triggered the suppression of the memories was the Wizard of Oz was going to come on, and my mom was telling us kids, "Oh, you're going to love this." It was the first time I'd ever seen it. And we all sat down as a family, and I was really enjoying it until the scene of the flying monkeys came, and took Dorothy and took Toto, and that triggered something in me, honestly relating back to what happened to me. And I ran out of the room. I was crying hysterically and everything. My mom couldn't understand what I was so upset about, and I guess they knew at that point it was time to suppress everything, and they did. I went through my whole entire childhood without knowing what was happening to me. I had a lot of the symptoms, chronic nosebleeds, unexplainable scars, which I still have to this day. I had a reoccurring nightmare of the first event, which lasted up until, really until I wrote Children of the Grays. I would still three or four times a year wake up screaming. It just made such an indelible mark on my psyche, that I could never get over that first meeting. And a lot of things that were happening paranormal-wise to me, which back then I didn't know the connection, and that got me interested in trying to learn about the paranormal field because I wanted to make it stop. And then I was always had a thing where I would look up to the sky and on my cousins and stuff, that there must be somebody up there and stuff like that. But it wasn't until I got to my early 20s and I started having severe panic attacks, and I was still having a lot of chronic nosebleeds. The doctors couldn't figure out anything, and I went ended up in therapy. And then from the therapy, it took two therapists, and when I finally found the right guy, and I had a breakthrough, and I didn't even tell him. It wasn't a situation where he was regressing me or anything like that, because he didn't even know what was happening to me. When I had the breakthrough, I didn't even want to accept it. I denied it myself. I didn't want to accept that this was what was really happening to me. And then once I came to grips with it, it was so taboo. At this point, it was in the 80s, and to this day, it's still taboo, but it's getting better. But back then, of course, you remember, it was very taboo. And I didn't want to tell anybody. I didn't even tell the therapist. And I just started working on myself to get better. Because I'd become agoraphobic, I didn't want to leave anywhere I was at, I didn't want to leave the house. And so I really got heavily into meditation at that time, which I still am daily, in order to learn to deal with this stuff and to cope with it. And I worked on self-hypnosis. I even took hypnosis classes because at one time I thought I was going to be able to break the mental hold that these guys have on you when you're taken. And I only had one little tiny incident I wrote about in Gray, the Children of the Grays, that worked. But And then eventually, you know, I waited 20-some years, and I just kept having more and more memories. Some things would trigger, of course, it would show up in certain dreams, and then I had the incident with another person. I could probably get to the cover of Children of the Grays that you were talking about in the introduction, but it's one of the most tragic things that happened to me. I was in the late 80s, and my girlfriend and I were living together, and even though she was on birth control, she mysteriously ended up pregnant. Wall would have blocked her view from the fifth one. Kind of similar like we do with in stirrups. And the tall gray was down between her legs. She was screaming hysterically, and I had never seen somebody in but one time, and they had me on another platform. I was completely paralyzed, helpless. I could only turn my head, and they had left the opening up on her left side, so I had a clear view of what was happening, and they left the opening. Nobody was down on the right side of my table, and I know now they wanted me to see it. They wanted to measure my emotional reaction to it. And, you know, I was screaming, I was cussing at them, I was making threats, everything, because I felt very, very helpless. And she was pleading with them, please don't take my baby, and why are you doing this? And to my knowledge, she had never had any kind of experiences before. And they took it, they took the fetus. And the next morning, we woke up, and this was in Las Vegas, and of course, you know, nice sunny day, sun's coming through. And I remembered it, like, right off the bat. I didn't say anything to her. And as she was getting up, she noticed blood on the sheets. It wasn't a lot, but a little bit. And so she went to the bathroom, and she called out from the bathroom, you better call my doctor, I'm bleeding. And, vaginally. And so I did, and they told us to come right in. And we weren't very far from their doctor's office, and he examined her and says, well, I think you've had a miscarriage. And she started arguing and saying that I there was no tissue, it was just blood. And he says, well, I need to do a procedure called DNC, where they go and they scrape the womb after a woman's had a miscarriage. And so we went right across the street on East O'Hara, the place called Women's Hospital at the time. And I called my mother, and I called her mother and told her, you know, something's happened and this is what's going down. And so they came down, and I remember being in the waiting room, and I saw the doctor coming out after he did the procedure, and he had this really strange look on his face, and I got up to go meet him. And he says, I said, was everything okay? And he said, no, she's fine, but he goes, it's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. He goes, if I hadn't just seen this woman last week, I would have thought she was never pregnant. I went in to clean the womb, and it was already cleaned. And subsequently, since that time, at the time, her and I didn't know that she remembered it, but on the way home, she brought it up, and so they had let her remember it as well. And we just like, you know, nobody's ever going to believe this. Let's just move on with our lives. And that's what we tried to do. But eventually, like when I came out with Children of the Grays and stuff and started getting some media attention, she since has went on two television shows separately, the same show that interviewed separately from me, and remembers the story, just as I told you, verbatim. You know, she still to this day remembers it and still has a great fear that they're going to come and get her again.
Did she ever have any other experiences, or was that the only time she was involved?
I don't think she ever did. I think that was the only time that she was ever involved. And you know, I never really had a lot of communication with her over the years. And, you know, they wanted to interview us separately.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the stories matched up. And, you know, she had said that she still sleeps like with a nightlight on every night because it affected her so much mentally.
Wow.
And You know, so it, that's one of the, you know, there's just so much, a lot of trauma involved in this, especially when it comes to the grades, because of the hybrid program. And even in baby takers, you know, the people that I interviewed in that had congruencies to my case. It just defies the odds, because the stuff that was brought up from these individuals is not your typical stuff that you hear in abduction cases. And that's why I picked them, because I get contacted all the time, several times a week, from people who have nobody to talk to about this stuff. And most of them have been traumatized. And I know, you know, there's that element out there of the space brothers, and that's good. And I do believe that there are beings out there that are benevolent, but, you know, when it comes to the grades, you know, it's a hard thing to get over from what they do to you. I've been able to get to that point to forgive them, because I think it's done out of necessity. I don't think, you know, you have to look at it. They're not wired like us. You know, they don't have the emotional makeup that humans do. And I think that's goes hand in hand with a lot of the experiments that they do on us, because, I mean, let's face it, they can only do so much biological stuff before they're going to have us figured out. And I'm sure they did that a long time ago. But creating these hybrids, like the little girl that's on the cover, I think they're exhibiting so much human emotions that the actual grays don't know how to handle them, you know, because they can't relate to it either, because they're not wired like that. They're pretty much devoid of any kind of emotion. And so they do a lot of experiments along that line. It's not just physical stuff that's done to you. There's a lot of experiments where they put you in certain scenarios. That's why they took me to be a witness to them taking the fetus, because they wanted to see what emotion that they could elicit from me. And, you know, they got it, because I was very emotional at that time. And I've actually since been regressed by Dr. Judy Blum in Los Angeles about that incident. And I was being filmed at the time, and I didn't even realize I got so deep into it, because I always felt such guilt from it. But they all told me, like, you know, tears are like running down my face. So I'm a grown man, you know, crying on camera.
Yeah.
Because this, it affected me emotionally so much. But I did get a lot of healing from it, because I remembered more than I had initially remembered under the regression. And I'd always blame myself for it, because I was like, well, you know, it was because of me that they took her. If she'd never met me, this never happened to her, and all this kind of stuff. And here she'd been traumatized for life from it. And then I realized that I had remembered more, and I realized how helpless that I really was. There was nothing that I could have done. And so when I came out of that regression session, I didn't really expect to feel it, but it was such a weight, like, lifted off my shoulders from that, that, you know, I've kind of tried to come to terms with understanding the species themselves. Like, I really think that they're doing this stuff out of necessity as a survival mechanism.
So talk about the bonding experience that leads to the cover.
About 2 to 3 years after that experience that I just talked about with the fetus being taken, I had another experience that I remembered a section of it where I was escorted by two small grays. And maybe most of your audience probably knows this, but I do want to say real quickly that, you know, I don't believe the small grays are the actual aliens per se. I think that they're the tall grays are the actual aliens. The small grays, I believe, are biological robots, clones, and they're just workers. And so they were two of them were escorting me, and I clearly thought I was on a craft. And most of the time, the lighting on these things is very unique. And this time, it was really dim, and it really caught my attention as to what was getting ready to happen. And there was just these little tiny ambient lights, and they just told me to wait and left me. And I could see this sort of a long ramp going down to this lighted doorway, and the light was not bleeding into the room that I was in. I mean, these guys actually have the ability to control light. And it was so bright that I couldn't even see into the room. And then I saw this figure break the light, and as it did, the light started bleeding into the room like our light would.
Yeah.
And she come up the ramp, and as she got close, it was a female hybrid. I could see as once she got a little bit closer, and you know the light wasn't so bright, I could see that it was an adult female hybrid. And she was dressed in sort of this loose-fitting white garment. And then I could see she was carrying something. And as she got closer, I could see that it was a small child. And so I just stood there, and she set the child down. And the child looked at me, and I looked at it. And the adult female hybrid told me that it was mine. And she wanted me to interact with it. And at first I refused. I used to be pretty defiant about these things. And as I looked at the child, I kind of started feeling this almost instant bond. And so I kneeled down, and I really started interacting with her like you would a toddler here. And she seemed to enjoy it. There was no communication. And I started to enjoy it, and they kind of let it go to that point, and then she picked the child up, and she started walking away, and I remember saying, hey, wait, I don't even know her name, come back, you know, all this kind of stuff like that,
yeah.
And that was it, and she made such an impression on me that I knew that if I ever went public, that I would have her on the cover of the book I can't really say with any certainty that she was mine, but I think that she probably was, and I don't know if it's the one that happened previously, you know, with my ex-girlfriend, but there's no way to know that stuff, but I did feel like a special bond with her. And so my brother is Jeffrey Oldham. He's an award-winning artist, lives in Las Vegas. So when I started writing Joan of the Greys, I described the child, you know, to him as best as I possibly could. And he came up with that cover, and we only had to make a couple of slight alterations to it. The child that I encountered, the hair was a little bit more white and a little bit more kind of stringy, thin looking than the child on the cover, but it's really, really close. And it was just remarkable because it was almost like he had seen her too. I mean, maybe that's sort of a brother's mental connection or something.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, that depiction of her, there's so many people have talked about it and told me that they've seen similar type hybrids that they've been presented to. And just seemed to be mesmerized by the picture. I really thought it was a great tribute to her.
How old would she be today?
Late 20s.
Okay, and there's only the one bonding experience. I think that's common. You only get to see the child once, and that's it, right? Is that what
actually, this is never. I've never talked about this, but. Not on the radio or anything. I did it at a conference, but about a year and a half ago, and I think this goes back to the implant thing about them knowing, you know, anytime they want to tune into you. But they know that that's something that has bothered me all this time. Always wondering, like, and there could be more, but this one is the one that they presented to me, you know. And it has just always bothered me, like, whatever happened to her, what's her purpose, you know, what has she integrated into our society, you know, our mutual friend Brad Steiger recently passed, you know, I talked about it with him, you know, and he thinks that the hybrid program is probably advanced enough that they are starting to integrate, and I agree, you know, because they're really, really close physically. To do that, and what better way to adapt but I had an experience, and I haven't had a lot of stuff happen in the last couple of years. And this is I had two experiences. One, I don't remember what happened. I just woke up with a large bruise on the top of my left hand, like a large sucker bite thing on my left hip, and blood coming out of my left ear all the same night.
Okay.
And so I figured something must have happened that night, but I don't remember what. The thing I do remember was a couple months apart, was sitting on the edge of one of these examining tables, being dressed this time, not always the case. And down this hallway, I see this adult female hybrid coming, and I just sort of instantly knew that it was her.
Wow.
And there wasn't a lot of conversation, but as far as I remember anyway, I wish I could remember more of it. But I do remember her telling me that she was happy to see me, that she worked in as part of the crew on the craft, that she wasn't here, and that you know, and I asked her name, and she says, and of course she's communicating telepathically, and she says, "As you would understand it," and then I just saw the letters RHY come in my head.
Wow.
So, and I said, "Rye," and she smiled and said, "Yes." And so I don't think that was probably what they referred to her as, but, you know, she just said, "As I would understand it," so she probably simplified it some way. And I remember, like, waking up that morning and remembering that little part of what happened and just being overjoyed, like, wow, all this time. And it's almost like sometimes they will surprise you, like, they will do something for you like that, because they had to have done it on purpose. I thought it was, once again, one of their experiments to see my emotional reaction to it.
Yeah. Has it always been hybrid stuff with you? Like you said, the last couple of years, it's sort of toned down. Is it moved from hybrid to messages, or has it always been hybrid encounters that you've had, like where they're getting sperm and stuff like that?
No, it really kind of varies. I think not only for myself, but, you know, one of the themes that I've seen running among experiencers and people that have, you know, I call people lifers who's had multiple experiences.
Yeah.
Because sometimes people just have one incident and that's it, you know. And I found that a lot of the people have enhanced psychic abilities time and time again, over and over, myself included. And also become very altruistic. You know, we no matter what your views or perceptions of the world was before these incidents, you change, become sort of less, really kind of less dogmatic religion and more spiritual in
yeah.
a sense. And your view of the world, you know, you start caring about the environment and what's happening to the planet. And you know, I'm a huge animal advocate, all the time doing stuff for that. And I'm not alone in that. I mean, it seems like, and certain artistic gifts as well. And there just seems to be this reoccurring theme. Have you found like this same type of thing?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's, like you see, even if you go to a UFO conference, you'll see how many people are vegetarians. It's like, it's really sort of bizarre how many people meditate and how many people there's that pattern. I think the free survey shows very high, where I think it's 80% or something, that their life completely changed in that direction that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. I haven't ate red meat in 30 years. So
there you go. So that's it. Yeah. I'm extremely interested in a couple of things that I want to make sure I get in here. I'm doing this thing on a porch. You've talked about paranormal stuff, and you do ghost hunting. You have all sorts of other stuff, and I think you agree with me that this is all linked together. It's not UFOs and paranormal. It's all basically this coming out of the same wherever it's coming from. With a porch, have you ever had these in your paranormal experiences? These porch where things appear, disappear, fly around the room, or bizarre things where, you know, things drop out of the sky where, you know, like a coin or something like that, these bizarre things. Have you had those kind of things?
Oh, yeah. And I've went on cases like that where there was a case in Lebanon, Tennessee, where these people have this old Victorian mansion, beautiful place, and very, very active location. And there was, I had actually picked up electronic voice EVP of some children there. And they had a case where he set out, this guy collected toy trains, and an engine that was sitting on, this is a three-level house with a big turret at the top, and a toy engine that he had sitting out disappeared and never came back. And then another time he was walking through his kitchen, and he got beamed with an old marble. Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And he thinks the kid probably threw it at him, and he found it, and it was like, looked like some antique marble.
Wow.
So that type of thing. But even myself, like, I've had a lot of strange things. Like, for a while, spoons were disappearing.
Okay.
Just like, you know, they take spoons. I remember one time leaving my sunglasses on a table by the door, went to the car. It's like, oh, okay. Fired my sunglasses, run back in, can't find them there. And I was like, oh, I must not have left them there. So I'm looking everywhere for them. I give up because I'm running late. I give up. So I start to leave again. And as I'm walking out the door, I glance over to the table, and there they were, right out in the open. Those kind of things, like popping in, popping out, they're quite common. That's very cool that what happened to you guys at the conference. That's pretty unusual for a conference.
Yeah, it's almost like it's they're playing with you. They're just sort of almost like where they leave marks on your body, almost like, you know, just to sort of like breadcrumbs. They don't really tell you anything, but it just keeps you sort of in the mood, and you're it gets you more interested, and you're trying to figure it out all the time.
Yeah.
The other thing I'm interested in. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, no. The guest I'm having next week had an experience similar to you, so I want to hear yours. And this is the experience of the portal opening up in the wall. Did you have that only one time, and can you describe what that was like?
Yeah, that was another thing that for years it bugged me, and this goes back to, once again, I'm thoroughly convinced that they can, through these implants, that they can monitor your thoughts at any given time that they want to. And it was always bugged me because I had incidents where I remembered seeing them right before I was taken, and then blacking out and open my eyes, and I'm wherever they take me to. And I've heard these stories like, I was floated through the wall, I was floated through the window, the roof of my car, all this type of thing. And I was like, man, it really bugged me. Like, why don't I remember how I'm being taken? You know, it'd always be sort of instant blackout, and or I wouldn't even remember them at all here. I would just, like, open my eyes, and there I am. And years. And then I guess it was about maybe 2010, 2011, right in there. I lived in Tennessee at the time, and lived on the Trail of Tears, right on the Trail of Tears. I mean, it was this place was really an active place. So I was getting all kinds of haunting stuff going on. And in my work, I try to part of the abilities that I have is higher audience, and also a little bit of mediumship. You know, I'm really good with spirit communication. And I've reached the point after all these years, basically, I try to help whoever's trying to contact me. And so I preface that because what happened was it's sometime in the middle of the night, and I'm laying on my left side facing the wall, and I hear like a tapping sound. It was on the mattress, like on the side of the bed right beside me. I'm a very light sleeper. A lot of experiencers have sleep disorders, and I'm one of them.
Yeah.
I'm sort of the hyper-vigilant sleeping. And so I hear this tap, wakes me up, but I don't open my eyes because my thought is it's the spirit coming to your help and they're trying to get my attention. And then I hear a tat-a-tat again. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to slowly open my eyes, try to adjust to the ambient light. Didn't expect, you know, I've seen full body apparitions, but I did not, it's rare. I didn't expect to see anything. So when I slowly opened my eyes, I was very surprised because it wasn't any kind of a ghost. It was three grays lined up in a row down the side of my bed, which sent me into an adrenaline rush right off the bat because that's not the normal procedure. But right away, I noticed that my bedroom wall didn't exist anymore. And I know this, some people, this probably sounds completely crazy. But in its place was this oval-shaped portal. And it had this white, misty stuff around the edge of it. And my entire wall in the bedroom was gone. And I could see through this portal into a craft. And it looked almost sort of like sort of like water mirage kind of looking, sort of a wavy, like it wasn't real clear, but I could see through it. And I could see another gray standing in this room in the craft. And I was married at the time, and I thought they were gonna take both of us, and I didn't want that to happen. And I was trying to speak, and I couldn't. They had suppressed my ability to speak. And I was trying to say the word no, so one syllable word. And I'm trying to say it in my head because I'm screaming no because I didn't want them to take her. And instantaneously, I go from my bed into this craft, and then they let me speak, and that word come out.
Interesting.
It was like that quick. And afterwards. Like, that's all I remember from the experience. I remember what happened after anything. But it occurred to me that they did that on purpose because they woke me up on purpose because they wanted me to see. I guess they knew, like, all these years that had bothered me. And it was another one of those quirky things. Like, okay, well, you know, we'll throw them a ball and we'll give them something here.
Yeah.
And then I finally got it. And I was like, wow. This is it. You know, they're opening up portals. This is why people think they're floating through their wall, because essentially their wall's not there anymore. And of course, our understanding of quantum physics, you know, it's hard for people to wrap their heads around this stuff because we're not there yet.
Yeah.
But these guys are, as you well know, are way, way ahead of us. And so I was like happy about it. Like, my gosh, now I understand. This is how everybody, when they say they're floated through material, the material objects are not there anymore.
Yeah.
And essentially, nothing's solid anyway. And everything's just fast or slow moving molecules. So, you know, that's another kind of hard thing for people to wrap their heads around. But, and I think, but what happens, my theory has always been that by going through these portals, you know, there's this dimensional aspect of it. And I really think that our chi, like our vibrational rate,
okay,
we have on this plane of existence, you know, it doesn't match the spirit world, like that dimension of the spirit world. And through my work with EVP and stuff, you know, a lot of, I really think they're vibrating at a faster rate than we are here. And so I think that when we're taken, especially people that are taken multiple times, that starts changing in people. And so, by going through these dimensions and portals so many times, I think we start vibrating at a faster rate. So we become a little more vibrating closer to the spirit world than we do this world. And that's why a lot of people become psychic or mediums. I know a ton of experiences that have become full-fledged mediums and legit deal. You know, I don't think everybody's psychic or everybody's medium. You know, I'm very selective on who I say that about.
Yeah.
And I think that really plays into it heavily. It does something to our consciousness. You know, our soul essence changes.
Yeah. Let's get to that. Do you think you're being trained? And let's go to healing. So you have the ability to heal. Did they teach you that? And of course, you've got to tell me the story about the oneness, because I always quote you on this when you confront them about God and this 3D holographic equation that you're shown.
I do energy healing, and I knew about it as a child, even though I didn't know what I was even doing. So I don't remember them training me about it, but they had to, because I have no idea how I knew about it.
Yeah, because I think
as a child, I'd never heard about it before.
Yeah,
and I just naturally.
Because they say that 40% of all experiencers, according to the free survey, 40% of all experiencers who answered the question said they can heal, and 50% say they've been healed, or somebody in their family has been healed. So that seems to be sort of a key part to the what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and they have healed people before, and so you know, but it, and again, it could be because they needed me, and they want to keep me healthy, and they've kept me extremely healthy. I mean, I've been very, very blessed in that regard. So that's the things I tried to pull the positives from these experiences out of, you know, having these abilities, using them to help other people, changing my world perspective, certain musical talents. You know, we talked about that at Essence House that night, you know, about, you know, songs just coming out of nowhere, that kind of thing. You're spot on with that. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, so tell me about the equation and the whole thing about the cancer formula when you are talking to the tall gray.
Yeah, they take me, and there's a depiction of it that my brother also drew up for me. And at first they had shown me this screen, which this happens to many people, that had all these cataclysmic events of Earth. And I didn't fall for it, because this has happened to me so many times, and I realized, like, this is another one of their, you know, brain trying to mess with your head stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I told the gray, I said, you're not gonna, why are you showing me this? Because I know you're not gonna let it happen. And I think he knew that I kind of got it, and they stopped it. And I walked up this little ramp, and this is sort of a little raised area, and it was just a wall, and this is with the tall gray. And I've always, you know, he's answered questions sometimes, depending on what it was, and I never felt really threatened by this particular tall gray. And so I'm standing by this wall. He asked me to sit down on this little short bench thing, which I was way too big for, and I didn't want to, and then I said, okay, well, but can I have permission to ask you something? And he said, you may. And the question that came to my mind was, who is your God? And without hesitation, he said, you know, we are all one with the one who is all. And it was so profound to me that I didn't even know how to respond. I was just like blown away by it. And I just quietly went over and sit down on a little bench. And I never really followed up on it, but and then what happened after that, the mood changed quite quickly, because he says, I have something I want to show you, and the wall disappeared, and this 3D hologram starts coming up, and this formula starts appearing on it, and it's really, really complicated. And he finishes, and he says, on your planet you have a disease called cancer. And I said, yes. And he said, this is the cure. And I'm like, oh my God, these guys, everything I've given them, they're, you know, this is how silly, this is how naive I was then. And so I was like, thank you. And, you know, I was so happy. And he's like, I said, it sounds kind of stupid, but I said, I need something to write on. Because, I don't know. First thing I'm thinking of, like, how to write this down, because there's no way I'm going to remember this, you know. And he said, no, you have to remember it. And I was like, I can, you know, I'm not even good at math, you know. And then I started getting upset, because I realized, like, they're playing with my head again. And it got to the point where I got kind of so angry that the small ones came back in and took me out. And you know, and the thing is, I like people to know when you know, I'm 6'4", 210 pounds, you know, but these guys, it's the mental control, you know. They may be, you know, 3.5-4 feet tall and rail thin, but it's not a physical thing. So when I say, you know, start being escorted out, they make you do whatever they want. There's no resisting. And so, you know, that was when you told me about another mutual friend of ours,
yeah,
who had a similar experience, and that they told her that she would remember when the time is right. I don't think that they were actually showing me the cure to cancer. I think they were just doing one other mental thing to get on me, which to me is some of the cruelest stuff that happens. But
it was kind of bizarre, though, to see. Yeah, go ahead. It was kind of bizarre to see it happen to somebody else. The same sort of the 3D holographic formula thing. It was kind of,
yeah.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it is. That's the kind of thing. You know, that there's so much stuff in the baby takers of experiencers. I mean, there's some jaw dropping stuff in there, congruency that are just like people, you know, like just no way. You know, how this is. Other than that, of course, the stuff's all real.
What about this? Go ahead. No, linked to this, I wanted to ask about the screen imaging. So do you think that maybe it's not even actually aliens? I mean, can they appear as whatever they want? Because you had the when you were young, they sort of turned into doctors, correct? So they're,
yeah.
It always makes me wonder what you're actually dealing with.
Right, and you don't know. I don't think there is an answer to that. You know, they're consistent, I'll give them that. If they don't look like the typical rays, they're very consistent.
Yeah.
The physicality of it, they feel a certain way. So, you know, there is that element to it. But because of their mental capabilities, I don't think we can say. Because they can do that.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's silly to think that we could defend ourselves against these guys, and I'm sure they're not the only ones that can do it.
Yeah.
Because when you can control the mind of somebody, you control everything.
Yeah.
And that's all it takes. You know, weaponry is pretty redundant at that point. One of the things I wanted to say before we close is, you know, a lot of people think when we talk like this that it sounds completely science fiction and everything, but I want people to know that I have provided, you know, I did a polygraph test with a guy named Joseph Paola, and he used to be Secret Service and Kennedy Detail in Los Angeles. You can look him up. He's one of the foremost experts in PATH. And, you know, I have the experience with the other person. So we've had multiple, you know, two people having the same experiences. You know, this is not sleep paralysis, people, you know.
Yeah.
I've provided all kinds of photographic evidence in both my books. Some of it matches up with other people's that it shouldn't. People can find out in Baby Takers. As far as the scars and the wounds and stuff coming back and that. And then recently, you know, I did an episode of Ancient Aliens, you know, where I did what's called a QEEG brain scan. It was interviewed by Nick Pope, which showed during this interview the things that we talked about, which was 6 or 7 different times, that when I talk about describing the stories, like even some of the ones we talked about tonight, it came from the section of my brain as memory, and not the section of my brain that is the creative process if I was making this stuff up. So that actually came from memories, which is even more proof than the polygraph test.
Wow.
You know, so this stuff is real, and people need to know, because, you know, so I mean, I've probably got more stuff, more evidence than anybody that I know of at this point, to the reality of this phenomenon. And I don't even really know what else I could possibly do.
Well, what are your future plans? Last question. What are your future plans, and how can people contact you?
Well, I actually had to take my website down because it was just too much to keep up with. Most of the time, people contact me through Messenger.
Yeah.
Future plans, I've got another book coming out that I'm actually this is going to be about spirit communication, near-death experience,
wow,
and that phenomenon. Again, I'm kind of getting back into that.
Beautiful. Okay, thank you, Brett, and we'll have you on again when it comes to spirit communication. I'm into that too, so I appreciate the wisdom you have, and I've always loved the material you put out, so thank you very much.
Well, thanks so much, Grant. I appreciate your support, and thanks for having me on.
Okay. Back to you, Race.
All right, gentlemen, that's a wrap. We're clear.
Thank you
so much, Brett.
I only had 65 questions left. I wanted to ask you, can I just ask you one question before we go? A location. People say this is all tied into location. Is it tied into location or the person? Because you moved around quite a bit, right?
Yeah. I'm in Alabama now, on the Gulf Coast. I haven't had anything happen here, but yeah, I bounced around. It's not location.
Yeah.
I think certain areas may be our hot spots, even Vegas being one. You know, I got a remarkable case out of Vegas about a week ago.
Wow.
Where this, you know, this was like, wow, you know, right in the middle of the city in the Lakes area, actually pretty close uphill to where Betsy's house is at, and lady had an incident, and she's had her family's had a history, and mom lives in Ohio, but she saw a huge triangle-shaped craft, very low, right over her house, and she expected to see it all in the news and everything, and it was nothing, and she was very, very upset. Of course, there's stuff going on in her house, too. I'm pretty sure she was taken, and she kind of has a history of that, too, and so I'm trying to have a couple of my Vegas people get a hold of her and go take some reading and stuff and
wow,
kind of talk to her, maybe even regress her and see what else we can pull out of it, but there's, you know, so I do think certain desert areas seem to be a little bit more active. But then again, you know, there's I have so much stuff happen in Tennessee and Ohio. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely the person.
Beautiful. Well, hopefully we can have you on again. I'd like to, when your new book comes, let me know and we'll do it again.
Okay, sounds great.
Nice
talking to you again, Ray, if you're still listening.
You too, Brent. You be good, brother.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Okay, will do. You guys get there. Bye-bye.
One